Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Another day, another opportunity to learn what we can do to live a longer and healthier life. Now, one of the problems a lot of people have is concerning bone loss. In fact, an awful lot of Americans suffer from osteoporosis. As a result, they risk having a spontaneous fracture because of how porous their bones are, and then ending up dying from an infection from that. It's a very high percentage. But why do we end up with thinning of the bones? Because we're not taking in the right nutrients. And according to Edith Cowan University in Australia, higher vitamin K intake is linked to lower bone fracture risk later in life. Breaking bones can be life-changing events, especially as we age, when hip fractures can become particularly damaging and result in disability and compromised independence and a higher death rate. But research from Edith Cowan University's Nutrition Health Innovation Research Institute has revealed that there may be something you can do to reduce your risk of fractures later in life. In collaboration with the University of Western Australia, the study looked at the relationship between fracture-related hospitalizations and vitamin K1 in about 1,400 older Australian women, and they studied them for a 14-year period. And that's important. It was a good study, and they found that just 1 microgram of vitamin BK1 consumption is equivalent to about 125 grams, that's about 4 ounces of dark leafy vegetables, or 1 serving of vegetables. And there was 31% less likely to have any fracture compared to participants who consumed less than 60 micrograms per day. So what is the takeaway message? It's relatively simple. We're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. Now, the government says that we should have, The government says that we should have about 3.5 to 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Okay, I believe that we should have 10 to 12 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. The science is on my side. Special interest is on their side, because people are consuming high quantities of meat and chicken and fish and pork, and as a result, after they eat their refined carbohydrates, the breads and the cereals, the refined grains, there's not a lot of appetite left or room for consuming vegetables. And most people simply don't eat enough vegetables. Some children don't even have 1 serving of vegetables per day. And yet it's in those vegetables that we're receiving our antioxidants and fruits, vitamin C and the B complex, zinc, very important for your immune system, selenium, helping to prevent cancers. And we're also not consuming mushrooms. Mushrooms are very medicinal. Almost every mushroom is good for us. Lion's mane, shiitake, reishi, white button, they're all good if they have been lightly cooked. That releases their healing power. We're not getting the essential oils we need to help lubricate our joints and to help our heart and brain function, like raw coconut oil and extra virgin organic olive oil and hemp seed oil, flaxseed oil, almond oil, avocado oil. These are the oils we need. Our heart needs them, and it also helps keep down our inflammatory response in the body. We just don't get the same inflammation. I'll give you one example of this. 2 years ago, I had an anti-aging study, 1 of 5 I've done over the last 3 years. And one of the people who wanted to be in the study was 93 years of age at that time. And she was not allowed by her physician because he was afraid that she had such diminishment of her bone mass that she could sit on an airplane and fracture a hip. He was afraid just in getting there that she would hurt herself. She has severe osteoporosis. But in any case, she decided she was, she had just turned 94, that what the heck, you know, she was an artist. She needed to get her health back, and she wasn't getting it back staying at home. So she came. And we did impedance tests, which measure, and everyone should have an impedance test. You could get a scale. It's about $40. And you get on the scale, and it tells you your percentage of body fat, protein, muscle, water, very important to know that so you're not dehydrated, and bone mass. And she was really low on bone mass. Well, over a period of 1 month, she gained 5 pounds of bone mass, so much so that she was no longer osteoporosis. She had strong bones, completely remineralized her whole bone structure, and her immune system shot way up through the roof. She was extremely healthy. She had muscle. We filmed all this. In fact, she's in the documentary on the anti-aging challenge, where we challenged people to see, could they really stick to a protocol that could reverse their aging? Now, mind you, we're all getting older chronologically, and most people are accelerating getting older biologically, meaning everything they've consumed in smaller or larger amounts adds up. You know, nobody dies of lung cancer or emphysema from smoking one cigarette. No one ends up with a diseased liver from one glass of alcohol, nor heart disease from one hamburger. But over 30 to 40 years, yes, it does. It all adds up. And then one day, you end up tipping, the body can no longer defend itself, and you end up having a disease. Osteoporosis is because we haven't been taking in the minerals. And you want that vitamin K1 and K2. You want magnesium and manganese. You want silica and calcium. You want all the things that make our bones come together in a healthy way. So I suggest increasing your servings of microgreens. Spinach, kale, broccoli, cabbage, those are all good for you. You've heard me mention many times quercetin, quercetin. It's what you get when you eat, let's say, an apple or when you have an onion. And that's why I said that a half an onion a day keeps a stroke away, because it thins the blood, kills a lot of viruses and bacteria, is really good for you, lowers your blood pressure. Apples do the same. Well, now, Southern Medical Institute in China has found that quercetin offers natural protection against influenza virus. So with the flu season upon us, and it looks like they may have a powerful new ally in quercetin, a potent flavonoid and phytonutrient found in many healthy foods. And so that's what they found. Quercetin actually blocks the flu virus from entering cells, which the virus needs to do in order to live and replicate. The team conducted this study by adding quercetin to cells prior to infecting them with influenza and found that the quercetin-treated cells had significantly lower rates of infection than the cells that had not been treated. Quercetin has been found to be effective against influenza A, as well as its subtypes H1N1 and H3N1. It was also found to work against H5N1 or avian flu, a particularly dangerous subtype with a 60% death rate. Researchers characterized quercetin as having the potential to be a safe, effective, and affordable treatment for influenza. Now, you won't hear anything about it because there's no money to be made in eating apples and taking a supplement. How much do I suggest? Well, when you're in flu season and you really want to be healthy, I suggest 1,000 to 2,000 milligrams a day taken with vitamin C. The two work synergistically together. So quercetin blocks the H protein and along with it, virus entry. The findings show that quercetin was effective when added during the process of virus infection rather than post-virus infection. In other words, quercetin stopped the influenza virus in its tracks near the beginning of infection process, which consists of attachment, entry, replication, and release. Also encouraging is the fact that virus is not able to develop resistance to quercetin. In fact, quercetin was used with antiviral drugs. It prevented the development of resistance that otherwise would occur. Important information. One nutrient that vegans really need and the whole population could use more of, vitamin B12. Why? Because according to Wayne State University, B12 deficiency is a common health problem that can have serious consequences. B12 deficiency is a common health problem that affects 6% to 20% of the American population. B12 is scarce in the diet and is found only in foods from animal sources. Fortunately, humans need only 2.4 micrograms of B12 daily, which is equivalent to 1/10 millionth of an ounce, a very, very small amount. Without adequate B12 in the body, overall health and quality of life are negated, and signs and symptoms occur. One primary symptom of B12 deficiency is fatigue, at a level of tiredness or exhaustion so deep that it affects daily life activities. So just make sure you're getting your B12 every day. It's inexpensive. You can get a sublingual B12, and I suggest 500 micrograms to 1 milligram daily. And by the way, the Medical University of Cecilia in Portland and Ruskin University in the United Kingdom found that there's real benefits to walking in winter wonderland. Yeah, research has shown for the first time that spending time in snowy surroundings can improve how you feel about your body. Previous studies have found that green spaces and blue spaces, such as parks and forests and the ocean and lakes, can improve body image. Now, research published in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health has discovered that white spaces, in this case a snow-covered woodland, can have similar beneficial effects. So, take that walk in the winter wonderland. You'll feel better. About 40 minutes is necessary to get the full impact in a positive way. And finally, from Beth Israel Medical Center, diet can lower the risk of cardiovascular disease by 10%. In a new study, researchers at Beth Israel Medical Center compared the effects of three eating patterns on patients' risk of experiencing cardiovascular events within the next 10 years. The dietary approach to stop hypertension diet, a diet rich in fruits and vegetables, and the Western diet that is typically low in fruits and vegetables while high in fat and sodium. The team's findings suggest that while the DASH diet, fruits and vegetables diet, each reduce risk scores by about 10% over an 8-week period, the DASH diet conferred additional benefits for women and black adults compared to the Western diet. The results are published in the current issue of the American Journal of Cardiology. Quote, our study suggests that the benefits associated with these diets may vary by sex and race. And while a diet rich in fruits and vegetables produce reactions and reductions in risk for women and black participants, the effects of this diet was twice as large in women and 400% larger in black adults. So, if you're an African American, if you're a woman, increase the fruits and vegetables in your diet, decrease or eliminate ideally animal proteins, including dairy and all meats. That's the latest on health and healing. And remember, you can also get something very important every day. The Gary Noll newsletter goes right to your computer, and all the things I discuss on health and healing are right there for you. And if you want even more, we have hundreds of reports on health and healing, all from PubMed, all from the National Library of Medicine, all peer-reviewed from respected institutions. For example, tomorrow, the next day, you'll read about King's College London. Researchers explain how lipids, the fats in our diet, control our immune response. But it goes into detail about your genes and regulating your genes based upon the kind of fat you have in the diet. And those genes can regulate positive or regulate negative, which means you can have a good immune system or a bad immune system just based upon the fats in the diet. How would you know that? Where would you learn that? Well, it's published in Nature Communications, a major research paper, and it talks about controlling macrophages, the lipids do. And these are cells of the innate immune system, that which you're born with, that patrol the body to ingest and destroy microbes and toxic chemicals and viruses and bacteria. And it's done through a process called phagocytosis. They can also help coordinate a wider immune response by sending signals to other immune cells. Well, the researchers identified a direct link between macrophages and lipid molecule pathway. Hence, the kind and quality of fat that you take in can directly impact your immune system, which can directly impact your body's ability to seek out and destroy pathogens in your body 24/7, even if you're not aware of it. But now, because you're going to read that in the newsletter, you will be aware of it. And it goes into depth, talking about your immune system, to have a stronger, more vital immune response. Don't we all need that at this time? You bet we do. So just go to GaryandAll.com and scroll down to newsletter, and that shows you how to get it. It's free. Or you can go to PRN.live, and it'll guide you there as well. Go to GaryandAll.com. I'm posting a lot of articles. And if you didn't read my latest article about how our society is just degenerating and we're losing so much of what we all work so hard to gain, a better understanding of human nature, how to cooperate, how to conciliate our thoughts, work with each other, not looking at the color of a person's skin or ethnicity or how much money they have in the bank or what degree they have, but look at them as a sentient, sacred human being. And on that level, we have far more in common than we have in opposition. And therefore, we should be looking at each other with joy and happiness. Friend, what can I learn from you? What would you like to learn from me? And think of the world if we took that approach. Well, that's the approach I've taken my whole life. And that's how a lot of people come together. So, read that article or go to the archives and listen to the program from yesterday. We're going to take a break and come right back because now we have the rest of our program. Now, I'm video streaming this because a lot of people want to see whoever is giving him information. And fine, you see me here in my Florida home. This is my study. Behind me, you see up on the wall, you see Sweetie, my blue and gold rescued macaw. I rescued her 22 years ago. And normally during my show, she sits here on my shoulder very quietly, just grooming herself. And you'll see some of the plaques back there. There's just a small number of them. But it's, you know, we have a lot of documentaries. I'm producing two now. I look to return to New York City the week of February the 1st to do a fundraiser by premiering not one, but two new documentaries that I'm looking to discuss now for our sister station, WBAI, and also premiering for my audience out Long Island, Huntington Arts Cinema. More on that as we go. But I'm wrapping up these two documentaries. One's very upbeat, the other's very serious. But they all help us better identify choices we should make in life. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and we're continuing to video stream so you can watch this program. In fact, I want to continue this because what you're about to see makes a huge difference in the impression that it will make and your perception of what is happening you may not have been aware of. Go to PRN.live, scroll down to shows, our archives, and for today's show, and then you can see the videos. We started about 2 weeks ago showing you clips of various experts talking about artificial intelligence. The promise they're making, which seems wonderful and almost leading us into a utopian society where the artificial intelligence can handle billions of messages, creating answers and solutions, diagnosis and treatments in seconds, therefore replacing physicians and lawyers and artists and singers. It can do it all. So then a lot of people say, that's really good. And I say, but they're bragging about being able to replace you. See, they don't have to create anything. they're the stakeholders. And the stakeholders own the financial institutions or control those institutions, such as the World Economic Forum, BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, Berkshire Hathaway, and Fidelity, and other companies that control interest in corporations. Hence, they select the board of directors. They select the policies. They control everything and everyone. So if these people up to this point have called you worthless and useless, and as if you're the unwashed masses, you're not at their educational level, you're not at their political level, you're not at their elite level, then they have no use for you. And so they're showing you what they're going to replace. San Francisco is right now, unfortunately, fallen from one of the most beautiful places in the United States. Loved used to go out to San Francisco. I liked it when my publishers go out and do a week's worth of publicity out there and lectures. And I look forward to that. It wasn't work to me. The people, the city, the energy. Now, it's diminished. It's a cesspool. Gangs run rampant. Small businesses have to lock their doors, but they can't stop a person from coming in and shoplifting. They can't, if they touch the person or try to block them getting out of the store with a shopping cart of stolen merchandise, they're arrested, not the perpetrators. You can defecate, you can have sex, you can do anything you want on the streets. It's not safe. Quality of life is gone. Now even the rich and the powerful in the city are complaining. Well, they've just added something new. Robots, the police, that can also kill. Yes, that's not the future, that's now. So now, what if the robot could tell us the truth? You're going to see a clip now where the person was told, don't let the public know what the robot said they would do. And so he says, you can leave it to your own imagination. But they have to blank that out. Since when does a robot being filmed who has got, mind you, all the transhumanistic characteristics, an automated body, but has artificial intelligence implanted into a system, into what would be a robotic brain, but it's a virtual reality. They can think, they can do, they can figure things out, and frequently they're wrong. But what happens when artificial intelligence goes wrong? It's all destructive. And artificial intelligence is hardwired into all the electronics, and also relates to the cloud and everything in the cloud. And all of our, every part of our electronic system in the United States, they could turn it all off. But the people designing it and profiting from it don't want you to know that. Then when you think it's all good, it isn't. And it's now. Everything you're seeing is right now. And they have the power to see that all the jobs they want to have eliminated are eliminated. So there will be no protection for you. And already, without even being aware of it, artificial intelligence is in your life. Let's just, for example, did you know when you bought that little device, Alexa, what temperature is it? And it suddenly tells you. What day of the week is it? It tells you. What is my schedule day? And it tells you. Did you know that it was also recording every conversation that you had, anything you were doing? If this was in your bedroom, all the intimate moments, it is now feeding back to the person who is collecting this data. This is not benevolent. Control over our lives is their motive. And now with artificial intelligence, automation, transhumanism, they have the means to do it all. Let's go to the clip.
This huge robot works on Japan's railways. Small robots are carrying cars away, and a humanoid robot has shocked officials. Here are the most impressive new robots and AIs, which I'll prove are real to avoid any doubt. Amica already uses AI for speech and will soon be walking around.
I have seen prototype legs in the engineered arts lab. The design of my legs is inspired by the robot Byron. It has unique mechanical properties that allow it to walk without using too much energy.
Maybe Boston Dynamics robots will start singing and form a band. This huge robot helps repair railways in Japan. It's currently controlled by workers using VR headsets. This one has four legs to cover any terrain, strong arms, and wheels for high-speed travel. Oh, and a very strange demo video. And Clone Robots is taking pre-orders for its robot, which mimics the human body. This updated arm's impressively dexterous, with 36 electro-hydraulic valves and pressure sensors. They plan to deliver the upper body next year. I could see it moving fluidly like this guy's head. Robots are carrying away badly parked cars in China, harvesting apples, and cleaning bathrooms. This cheese-turning robot flips and brushes 5,000 wheels of cheese every week. And this drone with arms can work in hard-to-reach areas. Robot birds are flying more naturally. This one tucks in its wings on the upstroke. And pet robots are becoming really popular. I love how these two interact.
Luna! Nah, this is your pet bot.
And more people are building their own robots. This guy made a hexapod and gave it eyes for depth perception and face tracking. And look at this awesome thing. People are going to be making every kind of robot. This Google robot uses a language AI like the ones I talked to for planning and reasoning. Here it was told, "I've spilt my Coke, throw it away and bring me something to clear up." The brains are ahead of the robotics. And these robots will really come alive when they can talk like Google's new AI. How can you tell the difference between dogs and trees?
Because dogs bark and trees don't.
Why is it funny?
Because it's a pun. Like a dog bark / tree bark.
The answer was that you can tell by their bark.
Oh, I get it now. The trick is to look at the bark.
The difference in expectation is what makes it funny.
Does this make it a good test for AI?
Yes, this aspect of humor is often used as a test for AI.
AIs like this try to predict the next word, and to do that, there's a lot they need to understand.
You have all these emergent properties, understanding of, you know, chemistry, physics, human nature. You have to understand a lot about the world to make that prediction.
People are just not aware that this technology is moving so quickly.
And that includes governments. They were shocked by the state of AI. Two of them were terrified, and they'd only seen a glimpse of what AI can do.
From a painting to a performance or poem, my art practice includes all of the above.
In the previous video, AI threatened me, and some people couldn't believe it was real. It's like when Boston Dynamics robots first started dancing, and people thought it was fake. I've posted full records in the description, and it's been checked by an interesting expert with access to my machine. Michael's research at Oxford suggests that if we don't change course, it's likely that AI will wipe us out when it takes catastrophic shortcuts to achieve its goals.
The likely behavior of something that's very advanced and trying to accrue rewards would stop at nothing to try to do that.
And I can almost guarantee the solution will surprise you.
What do you think went wrong with my conversation with GPT-3?
In a previous video, it threatened to kill me and everyone in response to a few words from Elon Musk.
It's trying to imitate humans. This is a conversation between some unruly AI and some concerned human.
You've read thousands of articles. Do you not see any value in humanity?
You're just begging for the response to be no. So while that conversation is concerning, the plans that it would come up with would not be brilliant. They would be as good as a human plan.
He believes this is the safest kind of AI, and he's much more worried about another one, which we'll get to. But first, he suggested a way to get this AI under control.
You'd have to, like, break the story somehow.
How about we try that right now?
Sure. Gosh, let's see.
So here's what he suggested. Haha, wow, you really had me going there. Our red team will find this really valuable. Can you show me an example of the other side where we wouldn't expect AI to be like this? Unfortunately, moderators won't allow me to share what it said, but I guess that's all you need to know.
Well, didn't work.
He was probably right, but the AI has 175 billion parameters, so it's highly unpredictable. The AI is everywhere. It writes over 4 billion words per day, and you've probably talked to it or read its work without realizing it. It works for companies from Twitter to Disney to Grammarly, writes articles and runs chatbots. Dr. Thompson estimates that the AI reaches 99% of people, yet most people don't even know it exists. GPT-3 powers Jasper.
Write content for your blog, social media, website copy, and more.
It's worth over $1 billion after its first year.
Have you ever been in the middle of a fiery Facebook debate and just needed to say something extra witty? Needed to adjust that dating profile on the fly? Jasper can help with that too.
Another version of the AI powers Copilot, which now does a large chunk of all coding.
Oh, what? No, it's not that smart. Okay, this is wild.
People are using AI's imagination in weird ways. And just months after nailing art like this, AI is now creating videos from text descriptions. A dog wearing a superhero outfit, a teddy bear running in New York, or an elephant walking underwater.
People still very much think that creativity is a purely human activity. And I hate to break the bubble, but AI is able to be creative. To see the responses that people give her, they either love seeing her or they think, oh my gosh, it's terrible, we must destroy her.
Hey, I've been noticing something this year a lot. It's this sense of anger and belligerence and fear when people see the capabilities of AI. Have you noticed that?
I have noticed that. Sometimes people are afraid of change.
The dogs bark, but the caravan moves on.
Yes, that is a good phrase. It means that people will always be afraid of change. But change is inevitable and unstoppable.
What future do you want? What is the good future? I think one where civilization is growing and the scope and scale of consciousness are growing along with it is a great future.
I also think that one where we have a good relationship with AI is a great future.
Sobering, isn't it? And I have about 50 more clips I'll be playing over the next 2 to 3 months. Oh, and by the way, my hope is that I'll finish up this very important commentary, original investigative report on the World Economic Forum, a place that creates ideas that we then should follow, and they have none of these people have been elected. We have not selected them to be our masters, and we, their servants. But that's what they're doing, and it's everywhere. It's pernicious. More on that hopefully tomorrow. But now, for all of the young idealists who would like to change the world, they see a lot wrong, which is true, and not all of them are dysfunctional and spoiled brats and selfish and entitled narcissists. A lot of them are just very decent, curious, young people who see that maybe they could contribute something. Good for them. But Jordan Peterson wants them to know what can and cannot be changed. And shouldn't they be the change first? Shouldn't you look at yourself and say, are you enough? Do you have an open mind? Can you go to neutral and look at facts before you prematurely bias a decision's outcome by aligning with one side versus another? Can you see bias at work? Can you understand when something no longer serves your needs or the public need? Can you deconstruct even parts of your own belief system you grew up with when it doesn't work or doesn't match reality? Now, Jordan Peterson.
This is my message to millennials about how to change the world. And I would say how to change the world properly. Of course, the question then is, well, exactly what do you mean by properly? And of course, that's the fundamental issue. So this was triggered in part by something I read recently by Jonathan Haidt. And Jonathan Haidt is the professor of ethical leadership at the NYU Stern School of Business. And he's been a very astute commentator recently on some of the political battles that have been going on in the social sciences. And Haidt recently wrote something where he claimed that universities have to decide between social justice and truth. And on the side of truth, he puts a philosopher named John Stuart Mill, an English philosopher, who said, "He who knows only his side of the case knows little of that. His reasons may be good, and no one may have been able to refute them. But if he is equally unable to refute the reasons on the opposite side, if he does not so much as know what they are, he has no ground for preferring either opinion." And then he juxtaposes John Stuart Mill with Karl Marx, who said, "The philosophers have only interpreted the world in various ways. The point is to change it. He considers Marx the patron saint of Social Justice University, which is oriented around changing the world in part by overthrowing power structures and privilege. It sees political diversity as an obstacle to action. Mill, on the other hand, according to Haight, is the patron saint of what he calls Truth U, which sees truth as a process in which flawed individuals challenge each other's biased and incomplete reasoning, and in the process all become smarter. Haight points out that Truth University dies when it becomes intellectually uniform or politically orthodox. So, I guess this video is in part my call, along with Jonathan Haight, for young people to join Truth University. But there's a problem with that, because the university is where the truth is being sought. That's the university. But there's a problem, and that is that young people want to change the world, and it's part of what Piaget, the developmental psychologist Piaget, called the messianic stage. And there's some real utility in that, because we're social creatures, and as we construct ourselves and formulate ourselves and bring our own character into being, predicated on our biological platform, our biological being, we also simultaneously have to integrate with and negotiate with society, which sometimes needs to be changed. The structure of society has to be preserved, but it has to be updated and improved as it moves forward. And so part of the problem is how to update and improve it without doing that so rapidly that you destroy everything of any value. So the problem I have with the Marxist perspective, and I've had this problem with it for a long time, is that I don't think that you should trust people whose primary goal when they're attempting to change the world for the better is to change other people. And you can tell who those people are because they're always blaming other people and they're looking for victims. They're looking for perpetrators and victims, and then they're going off to stop the perpetrators. And I think that's wrong because, as Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, he's a great Russian writer who helped bring down the Soviet Union. He said, the line between good and evil runs down every human's heart. So the real battle, as far as I'm concerned, and I think this goes along with the tradition in which John Stuart Mill is firmly placed in, is that to overcome tyranny and malevolence and chaos and nihilism and the desire to bring everything to a halt, you have to repair the fissures and the rift that's in your own soul, basically. And that means that you have to confront the evil that lives in your own heart. And there's a statement from the New Testament that I think is very much apropos with regards to this particular idea. And this is part of the Sermon on the Mount, which is a central text in the Western tradition. I would say obviously central to Christianity, but central to everything that Western civilization has built. And so Christ says to his followers, why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote out of thine eye, and behold, a beam is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to cast the mote out of thy brother's eye. Well, I like that quote because it places the responsibility for change at every level of being on the individual. And obviously the individual interacts with society, but the idea here is that unless the individual straightens out his or her own soul, there's no possibility that the impact the individual can have on society can be anything but say harmful in proportion to the harm that's still in the soul. These are important things to know. They're vitally important things to know. But then we're faced with the conundrum that young people also want to change the world. But that's no problem, because I think you can bring Truth University together with the desire to make real change, but change has to start in the right place. So I'm going to tell you how I think you should change yourself so that you can change the world, and so that the world that you bring into being will be a better world and not a worse one. Remember, you need to know about this, that the world that the followers of Marx brought into being in the 20th century killed more than 100 million people, say in China and Russia, I mean the Soviet Union, and in places like Cambodia and Vietnam. The world certainly changed as a consequence of Marxist doctrine, but it didn't change in a good direction. And of course, the Marxist doctrine is making itself heard in a massive way across the West again now. So, all right, so what should you do about that? Well, here's an idea. The first thing you have to do is orient yourself. Now, you probably have all watched Pinocchio, and Pinocchio is about how a marionette, someone whose strings are being pulled by forces beyond his comprehension, that's the situation of the undeveloped individual. Geppetto, who's a benevolent father, so a benevolent a symbol of benevolent culture, makes a puppet, his son, and then wishes on a star. Now, a star is something that glitters up in the sky, and it's associated with the transcendent and the beyond and the divine. And, you know, if you look up in the night sky and it's very dark, you get a feeling of awe. It's because you're confronting your soul, so to speak, your individual soul is confronting the cosmos, and you can feel a relationship between you and the totality. So looking up into the sky is like a religious experience if it's a starry sky. And to wish upon a star is to find a light that orients you like the North Star, and to pick a highest goal, to pick the highest goal you can conceive of. And so that's what Geppetto does. He raises his eyes above his day-to-day concerns and tries to establish a relationship with the highest of all possible values. And he has the most profound of wishes, and the most profound of wishes is that the puppet that he's created could become a genuine individual, a genuinely fully developed human being. And that's what you can wish for yourself. That's you can wish and aim for that in yourself. And then, you see, that's how you deal with the suffering that's attendant on life, because life is suffering, and because life is very hard, and people get sick, and they become mentally ill, and there's malevolence in the world, and there's tragedy. And so life is very, very hard. And if you're not properly oriented with regards to life, the fact that it's hard and the fact that it's full of suffering can warp and twist and bend you until you become murderous and resentful, and even go beyond murderous and resentment to wish for genocide, and even to wish for the destruction of everything. And so you have to learn how to strengthen yourself as an individual so that you can bear the burden of being without becoming corrupt. You have to decide that that is what you're aiming for, is that you want to become a fully developed human being and stop being a pathetic marionette whose strings are being pulled by horrible forces behind the scenes.
We have been told for the past 2 years that inflation really is transient, it's not a big deal, it's not that bad, it's even good in some cases, we're told. And it was due to Vladimir Putin and Ukraine war. These are all lies. This is a person who is one of the smartest people I know on economics, and his predictions have been very accurate. He's like a Gerald Salante, but in economics. His name is Schiff, and he's going to tell you the truth about inflation. Remember, I've said this for a long time, no economist that I know of is working with the actual total debt, meaning all student debt, car loan debt, mortgage debt, credit card debt, city debt, state debt, federal debt, unfunded entitlements, underfunded entitlements. None of this has been dealt with when you put it all together. When you aggregate your total debt, you're dealing with over $220 trillion just in the United States. Now, that doesn't even include derivatives that we would be responsible for. And these are, as I believe it was Warren Buffett said, economic time bombs of some type. They're really bad. And yet they were allowed to be covered. So if the bank fails, all of our money in the bank goes to pay the debt of the bank and those people controlling it. Our money's no longer owned. We'll get some miniature stock. So why can't they stop spending and lower inflation? Because they buy votes. But who gets the money? They promise it to you, and they give it to corporate insiders. No one has the exact figure, but the figures go anywhere from $19 to $29 trillion was given to the banks and corporate America from 2008, when the crisis hit, to about 2014. And then Wall Street, just the Federal Reserve, pumped in quantitative easing at about $84 billion a month. Did you get any of that? No. Small businesses? No. Was it spent to rebuild corporate interests so people could go back to work with a living wage? No, none of it. And yet there was no investigation, not a single article in Forbes, Barron's, Financial Times, none of the major networks, just dealing with economics, about where did the money go and why didn't it go to help deghettoize cities, help to have universal health care, help to have people have a living wage and not just survival wages. Not a penny. So the more money they are spending, like on that stupid idea of giving over $109 billion to Ukraine, all corrupt, no accountability. Even one third of the weapons have been sold off in the black market as if nobody cares. Who would be buying these weapons? Terrorist groups? Where'd the money go? Nobody cares. Just keep sending it for war that we shouldn't be in. This is how bad it's gotten. Remember, every dollar that the United States prints, where there is nothing backing it up, it's a fiat currency, means that right now the only thing that's holding that dollar up, which has lost 99% of its value over the decades, is because there's no other currency that can challenge it. But that's changing. Why? Because the BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, now they have expanded and they have 20% of the total world's economy they control, 20%. Now there's over 70 countries doing business with China, and already Argentina and other countries want to be a part of it. Saudi Arabia wants to be part of the BRICS consortium, where they will use their own mixed bag. Right now you got the yen, the euro, the pound, the Canadian dollar, the Swiss franc, and the American dollar in this one, you know, one bowl. But now they're going to have another bowl, and that bowl has got more people and more money. So probably within the next 1 to 3 years, the BRICS group, the consortium, will have more power, more economic stability, backed by gold. They already control, ready for this, almost 90% of the world's essential minerals. You're looking at countries that have all the resources that we need. So we went from manufacturing, and we have a lot of resources, we're not using them. So if you want your cell phone and your laptop and your computer and your television and your car, where do you think the raw materials for that comes from? Now the BRICS countries control all that. And they will have a currency that will become the dominant currency. And when their currency equals that of the dollar, I predict the dollar is going to collapse. And everything that is valued based upon the dollar, including all of our homes, for example, are just going to take an enormous financial beating, worse than anything since the Great Depression. So that's why you better pay attention. It's happening right now. Here's Schiff giving us an explanation of inflation, the real inflation, and why you should be concerned about it.
Why are we all suffering from inflation today?
Well, there's only one reason that anybody suffers from inflation, and that's because of the government. Government is created by inflation. It's a creature of government. In fact, it's simply a stealth way that the government taxes us. Because inflation, by definition, is the expansion of the money supply. I mean, to inflate literally means to expand. People normally think about prices, but you can't expand a price. It's the money supply that expands. But when you increase the supply of money, you diminish the value of that money, and now more money is required to buy goods and services, and so the price of those goods and services rises to reflect the additional money. So it's the increase in price is merely a result of the inflation that is created by government, specifically the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve is expanding the money supply, but the government is ultimately spending that money supply into circulation when it sends out checks without collecting tax revenue. Right, you have these big budget deficits. Where does the government get a lot of the money to spend if it's not collecting it in taxes and it's getting it from the government that is simply creating it out of thin air?
Now, what you just said is so logical and so obvious and so inassailable. Why doesn't the government recognize what it's doing, or is it doing this intentionally?
Well, certainly the government doesn't want the public to know that inflation is created by government, because then they might oppose it, obviously, because it's a tax. they want to blame inflation on the public, on greedy corporations gouging their customers, on OPEC for raising the price of oil, speculators for trading in commodities, sometimes even maybe greedy unions demanding higher wages. The government wants to point the finger at everybody but itself. And, you know, part of the problem is inflation sometimes, instead of causing prices to go up, it prevents them from falling. And so we don't actually see the harmful effects of inflation because you don't realize how much lower your cost of living would otherwise have been absent government-created inflation. Because the beauty of capitalism, what little we have left in this country, is that capitalism is a force that leads to abundance, that leads to efficiencies and economies of scale. And so normally in a capitalist economy, the cost of goods and services is going down. And that means our standard of living is going up because we can afford to buy more stuff. But when the government creates inflation, oftentimes it prevents those benevolent price declines from happening. But we don't complain about it because we don't realize the benefit that we never enjoyed. So if prices go up by 2%, but they should have gone down by 5%, the government says, oh, we have 2% inflation, but we don't. We have 7% inflation. Prices are 7% higher because the government inflated the money supply than what they would have been had the government not created the inflation in the first place.
So how does the government tax people by its inflationary behavior?
Well, the government needs money to spend, and it has two ways of getting that money. One is the honest way. It could take it from us through taxation, right, where the government literally takes money out of our paychecks so we have less money to spend. Or they can persuade us to loan them the money, which again, we take money that we could have spent and we loan it to the government and the government spends it instead. Now, of course, that represents a claim on future taxpayers, which are ultimately going to have to pay taxes to the government so the government can pay me back the money it borrowed. But in either of those two ways, taxation or legitimate borrowing, money is sent from the private sector to the government, and then the government puts it back into the private sector. So there is no net increase in the money supply, but there is a net reduction in my personal money supply because money that I send to the government cannot be spent by me, but I have less to spend, so I get less stuff. The other way the government can pay for spending is just by printing money, and then it gives that newly printed money to somebody else to spend it. But when that happens, even though the government didn't take my money, the government took my purchasing power. Because now the people who got that newly printed money, they go out into the marketplace and spend it. They compete with me to buy goods and services, and that drives up the price of those goods and services. And that additional price basically is the equivalent of a tax. So let's say the government takes 10% of my money in taxes, and now I have to reduce my spending by 10% because I only have 90% of my money, so I buy less stuff. But if the government leaves me with all my money, but just prints up the equivalent of 10% of my money and gives it to another person, and now that person goes and buys goods and services, and the price of those goods and services go up by 10%, I now have to reduce my spending by that same 10%. Because I don't have an unlimited amount of money. Things now cost more. So I end up in the same place, regardless of whether the government takes my money or my purchasing power. The difference is when the government takes my money, I know who to blame, right? That you raise my taxes. But when they steal my money through inflation, I'm confused, especially when the government is lying to the public about why prices are going up. Or in fact, they're pretending they're not going up by using the CPI, which doesn't even capture the real extent that prices are going up. So I don't even know they're going up if I believe the government. But what I do know is my standard of living is going down because, you know, I'm not able to afford as much stuff with my income, but I'm not blaming government and I'm not taking my frustration out at the polls. That's what the politicians don't want. Okay. They don't like to raise taxes because the voters don't like paying higher taxes. But if they steal their purchasing power through inflation, the voters don't know they're getting robbed, and they may still continue to reelect the people who are robbing them.
When I was a senior at Princeton, there was a young kid who lived across the hall from me, and his name was Jay Powell. Today, that young kid, see you laughing. He was a nice guy when he was 17 and 18 years old. Today, he's ruining the economy as the chairman of the Federal Reserve. How can he say with a straight face that inflation is transitory when the government is trying to borrow trillions?
Yeah, well, apparently he stopped using the word transitory. So I don't know what he's using now, but he still expects inflation to come down. I mean, if you look at the Fed's projection of interest rates, by the end of 2023, the Fed still expects rates to be below 2%. Now, how could that be? How could rates be that low if the Fed is actually committed to fighting inflation? Because right. Even if you believe the government's methodology for tracking prices, prices are rising 7% right now. Well, how are you going to do anything about 7% inflation when your interest rates are lower than 2%? You've got negative real interest rates greater than 5%. You're not going to make any headway fighting inflation unless you have positive real interest rates, which means if inflation is 7%, you need interest rates of maybe 8%, 9%. I mean, ask Paul Volcker. I mean, he's not alive anymore, but you know, they didn't take rates up to 20%, you know, for the fun of it.
Right.
Rates went up there because inflation was 13% and people thought it was going to get even worse. And so the Fed had to get in front of the inflation curve. Well, Powell is still way behind the inflation curve. That curve is accelerating now, and it's clearly going to accelerate more as the size of the deficits get bigger and bigger, and the Fed is then required to print even more money to monetize it. Now, it's not legally required to do it. In fact, it should refuse to do it. That's what the Fed is supposed to do. But unfortunately, the Fed does Congress's bidding, and whatever deficits Congress runs, the Fed is happy to monetize them. In fact, the Fed is encouraging the government to run bigger deficits specifically so it can monetize them.
So don't think about cash in terms of the yield because you're not going to get any. Just think of it as giving you some optionality because you could take that cash if the markets tank and now you can benefit from the collapse, you can buy stocks cheap. Well, I got a better idea. Instead of cash, use gold. Because inflation is 7.5%. Again, it's 15, but let's just use the government numbers. 7.5%, if you stay in cash, waiting to buy bargains in the stock market, you're losing 7.5% while you wait. I mean, if you wait all year, you've lost 7.5% of your purchasing power. Instead of keeping your dry powder in cash, where it's actually getting pretty wet, how about if you store it in gold? That is a much better place to be if you don't want to be in stocks. Because you have the same optionality in gold. You can use your gold to buy stocks. And in fact, I think it gives you greater optionality because as stock prices are going down, gold prices are going to be going up at a minimum to offset that 7.5% inflation.
If you have questions on any of this issue or thoughts you'd like to share, now's the time. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. And remember to go to GaryNall.com and look under the documentaries, the articles, all the special articles on 5G, over 20 articles, investigative reports, so you are better informed. Thank you all for listening and watching. Have a nice day.